Ross, Chief Judge Siegel, and Judge Smith. The Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals panel, November 4, 2021, for our final oral argument of the day, which is American Family Mutual Insurance Company versus Progressive Direct Insurance Company. Counsel, we are obviously hosting the argument on our Zoom platform rather than live, so I will just let you know that even though we can see each other and see each other's names, we are only making an audio recording, not a video recording. So that means you should go ahead and state your name as you commence each leg of your argument for the sake of the recording. Each side will have 15 minutes for your argument with an additional 5 minutes for appellant's counsel to use for rebuttal. Counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Michelle Hurley. I'm here today representing the appellant in this case, American Family Mutual Insurance Company. We are here today asking the court to reverse the trial court's decision and vacate the arbitration awards and remand the matter back to arbitration forums for further proceedings. We're basing that on the fact that the district court erred in finding that the passenger vehicle definition includes all pickup trucks rather than those that are just separately defined by the pickup truck definition. I think it would be helpful to give a little bit of context to that definition and why it's important. You know, obviously these cases came out of a claim for indemnification under the No Fault Act, which provides that you are allowed indemnification if the at-fault vehicle is a commercial vehicle weighing in excess of 5,500 pounds. Now, that necessitates looking at the definition of a commercial vehicle, which is actually defined within the No Fault Act. But unfortunately, one of the subdivisions of that definition implicates the passenger vehicle definition, which is located in the vehicle registration and taxation statute. So it kind of pulls you out of the No Fault Act and requires you to go look at that particular provision. And when you look at that definition, I think it's important to look at it in the context of the entire statute. So the context of 168.002, which is a list of definitions. Subpart 24, which defines the passenger vehicle, is only one definition in that larger list of definitions. There are multiple vehicles that are being defined in that statute, not just a passenger vehicle. So when you look at it in that context, and then you look at the subparts of subdivision 24, what you're going to see are three different subparts. The first is a catch-all. It is saying essentially, when you see all of these other definitions of other vehicles, this is a catch-all for anything that's not separately defined. And then the second section, subpart B, is a list of.
And what is that catch-all phrase state?
The catch-all phrase is passenger automobile means any motor vehicle designed and used for carrying not more than 15 individuals, including the driver. That's subpart A. And so when we read that in context, again, with the rest of the definitions, this is one additional definition of a different type of motor vehicle. And then when you look at subpart B, you see vehicles that would have been included in that definition that they are specifically excluding: the motorcycles, the motor scooters, the buses, commuter vans. And then you have subdivision C. And subdivision C is an inclusive subpart, okay? It's an inclusive subpart in that it's taking vehicles that are already defined separately under that same statute and pulling them into the definition of a passenger vehicle. Progressive in this case is
hold on. You say pulling them into the definition.
Yes.
Why aren't they already in the definition based upon what you call the catch-all phrase? And you know that, of course, our court and the Supreme Court have said on a number of occasions that the word including is not meant to be exclusive, it is inclusive. And it goes further in this case because it includes but is not limited to these things. Why aren't these just examples of a non-exclusive list?
It is an example of a non-exclusive list, Your Honor. We are certainly in no way arguing that this is an exclusionary meant to identify only the things that are included in this. What we are saying is that subpart A is it's a very broad category of motor vehicles that are not separately defined under this statute. What this subpart C is doing is saying, okay, you have your passenger vehicles, you have your pickup trucks, you have your vans, you have your one-ton pickup trucks, you have your farm trucks. There's a whole list of different vehicles that are being defined. And what the passenger vehicle statute is doing with subpart C is saying, yes, there is this broad scope of vehicles that we've now defined by this statement that are not separately defined, with such as sedans, SUVs, right? You have this broad topic, but in addition to those vehicles, they are including these other separately defined vehicles under the statute. They are including those pickup trucks and vans defined by the statute.
The statute doesn't say in addition to what's in paragraph A. It says that paragraph A includes these things, and this list is not meant to be an exclusive list because it's not limited to these things. Now, am I correct about that?
You are absolutely correct about that. And I think it has to go back to that subpart A and what Progressive focused on this as well, is that word any. And what does that word any in that first subpart mean? What we believe that means is that it's referring to any vehicle that has not been separately defined under this statute. Because remember, this subdivision is one part of a larger definitional statute that has many other vehicles separately defined. And so we believe that the word any there is meant to say anything that has not already been defined. We don't have a separate definition for these vehicles. We are going to include them here, which would be your sedans, which would be your SUVs. Pickup trucks are separately defined. And so they have to pull those in via that subpart C because they are separately defined.
Oh, I'm sorry, Judge Ross, go ahead.
No, I'll ask one quick follow-up and I'll be quiet and let you ask the next one. But you're asking us to read paragraph C as an exclusion, as a partially exclusive. Yes?
No, Your Honor, I'm not. I'm asking you to read it as we have a specific definition of passenger vehicle that does not include all of these other separately defined vehicles. And what subpart C is doing is saying, yes, we understand we have all these separately defined vehicles. Pickup trucks, vans are two of those. We are going to bring those into the definition. We are going to include those. It doesn't exclude any, it's not an exhaustive list. It's saying because these vehicles are separately defined, we need to call them out because we do want to include them in this definition. It doesn't mean that it's an exhaustive list. It means that there's still the sedans and SUVs, and the but not limited to is referring to those vehicles. It's referring to all those other vehicles that are captured in subpart A that are not separately defined. It's saying we want to add these to that other list that we already have going. So we certainly don't believe that it's an exclusionary provision.
So is it your argument that there can be other vehicles that we would all refer to as pickup trucks that might be heavier than the limit, you know, than the definition in subdivision 26, but that could still qualify as a passenger automobile or passenger vehicle? I mean, do you agree with that or not?
Yes. So there's going to, basically what it's going to divide is that there are pickup trucks that would then be considered one-ton pickup trucks or trucks. They actually meet other versions of the statute. Unfortunately, there is a small
gap. So you're
gap
saying
between.
Only if they're specifically included somehow or another under 60, you know, in the no fault statute. Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that our reading of the statute is that if you meet the definition of a pickup truck as provided in subdivision 26, you are a passenger vehicle. If you do not meet that definition and you are a pickup truck because you have a carrying capacity in excess of 3/4 ton, then you would not be a pickup truck you would not be a passenger vehicle under the passenger vehicle statute because you didn't meet that statutory definition of a pickup truck. So there are larger, basically what that
so
means is
what
that larger.
What if it's not a pickup truck, but it is a semi-tractor trailer, but it doesn't carry more than 15 people? That would be any motor vehicle, right?
Right. Any motor vehicle would essentially fit the definition of subpart A. If we only looked at subpart A and we took it as this is separate and doesn't have anything to do with these other definitions, we just want to read it all by itself, then that, yes, that means that that list of passenger vehicles grows exponentially because it wouldn't just include pickup trucks and vans. It would include any other of these defined vehicles in
so
that.
So what does it mean then in subdivision A when it talks about that the motor vehicle designed and used for. Let's take out the not more than,
right?
But designed and used for carrying individuals. I mean, the title of it is passenger vehicles and passenger. So doesn't it have to have something to do with passengers?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't.
It's not. You're saying that's irrelevant. It's just the 15 people.
It's not more than 15 people, including the driver. So it could literally only have one seat just for the driver, and it would still meet that definition.
So you're saying a combine would qualify because there's a space for a driver in a combine, would qualify as a passenger automobile.
So a combine is, the only reason that I know this because I've dealt with a lot of these issues. The only reason I know that a combine would not is because it's not considered, it doesn't meet the definition of a motor vehicle. That's what takes it out of this because there is another, I mean, technically when you look at subpart A.
So, but a semi tractor trailer would qualify as a passenger automobile.
Yes.
That's your argument.
Yes. A combine wouldn't simply because it's not designed for use on the roadway. So it doesn't meet the definition of a motor vehicle. We're still talking just about motor vehicles here.
So any, as long as it wasn't for a common carrier purpose, it was wholly owned by a company and it was a massive, you know, 5-ton vehicle, it would still qualify. Definitely used for industrial purposes, not carrying passengers, it would still qualify as a passenger automobile.
Yes, Your Honor. For purposes of the vehicle registration statute.
No, we're talking about the no-fault statute.
We are. The no-fault statute is different because you can qualify in two other ways to be a commercial vehicle. Not being a passenger vehicle is one of those ways. But one of the other
ways
is—
I'm just focusing on that one though, on the passenger vehicle.
Yes.
Not the others. Yes. This is not a common carrier and it's not—
Used in the for hire transportation.
Exactly. But it's a 10 ton truck that carries one person.
Exactly. So you've got farm trucks, motor homes, dump trucks, snow plows, garbage trucks, all of those things would then be passenger vehicles because they are designed to carry not more than 15 passengers in them, including the driver. So all of those would be considered.
And so there'd be no right to indemnity under the no-fault law then is what you're arguing. It's only pickup trucks that are over 5,500 pounds or what, I mean, sorry. That have a carrying capacity of 3/4 ton or less.
They're
commonly known as a pickup truck, but what's the logic in that then? I don't understand the logic of the statute. And I think we're supposed to kind of have statutes make sense.
Are you talking about the passenger vehicle definition statute, Your Honor?
Yes, under no fault. If a semi-tractor trailer doesn't, you know, is excluded from the indemnity provision under no fault, why would you exclude a smaller pickup truck?
No, Your Honor.
A pickup truck that's bigger, but still not like the Ram, whatever we've got in this case that we're arguing about, or the Ford F-150.
Okay. But,
are still a lot smaller than a semi-tractor trailer.
Right. I think we got our paths crossed here. So
I would assume so. Help me out here.
Let me try and clear it up. Okay. Under the passenger vehicle definition, the reading of the trial court and the reading that Progressive is asserting, a semi-tractor trailer would be considered a passenger vehicle. Okay. Now that would be the way that it would be for the registration, for the taxation, for all of those purposes. Under the No Fault Act, it would be a passenger vehicle. But there are two other ways that you can qualify as a commercial vehicle under the definition of a commercial vehicle in the No-Fault Act. One is being a common carrier, and one is being in the for-hire transportation of persons.
But it's not. Property. It's a semi-trailer tractor that doesn't qualify under either of those.
If it didn't qualify under either of those, you wouldn't have the right to indemnity anymore because it would be considered a passenger vehicle. And the passenger vehicle is kind of—
But you're saying, I mean, that's where I'm tied up in your logic, is you're saying there wouldn't be a right to indemnity for a much larger truck. But there would be for a smaller pickup truck, but that's still bigger than the definition of pickup truck in the statute.
That would be the case under what Progressive is putting forward, not what American Family is putting forward. What American Family is putting forward is a semi-tractor trailer is not a passenger vehicle because it is separately defined under those statutes. It is not, our interpretation of the statute is that they are not passenger vehicles.
So there's another provision in the vehicle registration statute that defines
a semi-tractor.
And then is not a motor vehicle.
There's a separate definition for motor vehicle. There's separate definition for a pickup truck or a van. There's a lot of other definitions in there and that's what we're saying is that those definitions are separate from the passenger vehicle statute.
Okay. No, I'm sorry to belabor this, but in 65B then that they're a semi-tractor trailer is excluded from indemnity?
No. In the No Fault Act, a semi-tractor trailer would be considered a common carrier, and therefore it's a commercial vehicle.
What if it's not a common carrier though? I mean, I don't want to get into all that.
If it's not a common carrier and it's not being used for hire transportation of property, the only way it can be considered a commercial vehicle for purposes of the No Fault Act is if it's not a passenger vehicle. Under our definition of a passenger vehicle, it would not be a passenger vehicle and you would have the right to indemnity. But under Progressive's definition, the way that they're reading it, a semi-tractor trailer would be a passenger
vehicle. Wait, you're the appellant in this case, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you. Your time has expired, but you will have 5 additional minutes to, we can twist around when we get there. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Stephen Warner, and I represent the respondents, Progressive Direct Insurance Company and Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. This court needs to look no further than the plain language of MnSTAT section 168.002 subdivision 24 to resolve these appeals. Subpart A of that subdivision specifically says that a passenger vehicle is any motor vehicle designed and used for carrying not more than 15 individuals, including the driver. It doesn't say passenger vehicle is any vehicle not separately defined in other portions of this section or anything like that. It's any motor vehicle designed and used. Now, I would submit designed and used is, the word used is an important word in this statute. Because the use matters. If it's being used to carry passengers, that's one thing. If it's being used for the transport of property, if it's designed and used for that purpose, it's another thing. It's not a passenger vehicle in that situation. But if we just
may I ask one question, please?
Yes, Your Honor.
Minnesota Statute 168.002 Subdivision 21A have any application where it defines non-commercial vehicle?
Your Honor, I would submit that it does not, and this ties into what I would submit is a flawed premise that all of the appellant's arguments are based on, which is that you have to look at 168.002 Subdivision 24 in combination with all of the other definitional provisions in that section. That's not what 65B.43 subdivision 12 says. What 65B.43 subdivision 12, which is the definition of commercial vehicle, says is that a commercial vehicle is any vehicle that's 5,500 pounds or more other than a passenger vehicle as defined in subdivision 24. It doesn't invite the court, doesn't invite people trying to figure out what the statute means to look at any other provision in 168.002. And I would point out that when the legislature wants the courts or people to look at something other than a specific provision, they do it. For example, in 65.
Yes, sir. Let me interrupt you with a hypothetical. First, let me frame it in this way. I mean, this is a very interesting question of statutory interpretation because of the way the statute is drafted. And I agree with you, I think, as Judge Guthman went through subdivision 24 and one step methodically, one step at a time, and reached the conclusion that the court reached. As a matter of engineering and mechanics, certainly the court was grammatically correct, but I want to press you on a matter of syntax and semantics. I think semantically the court was correct. I'm not sure as a matter of syntax, or syntactically it was correct. I'm not sure semantically it's correct. Let me offer up a hypothetical that I think might make the point that I'm concerned about, which is that it's possible for an apparently all-inclusive categorical list to include an item that embeds an exclusion. And here's a hypothetical. So let's say we've got a farmer's market outside of the court here, and we're all live instead of on Zoom. And I say, you know what, counsel and judges and parties, we're going to have a potluck to celebrate this case after the oral argument. And you can go out, and I encourage you to go out and purchase any food item you want from the farmer's market and bring with you any food item whatsoever from the farmer's market. And by the way, this includes, but is not limited to, any bread, any meats, any cheese, or any non-allergenic nuts. And by the way, here's a list of allergenic nuts and non-allergenic nuts. Top of the list of allergenic nuts is peanuts. And Mr. Warner, you go over and you see peanuts and you decide, you know, the judge said I can bring anything I want over if I purchase it from the food, from the farmer's market. And the list of inclusions is included, but not limited to. Well, it's true, peanuts are not included on that list, but the list is non-exhaustive. Do you think it's reasonable to interpret that invitation for you to bring over a barrel of peanuts and peanut oil and peanut butter?
I think it's much less reasonable to interpret that way if, in your hypothetical, there is nothing that identifies specifically excluded items.
Well, isn't that exactly what happens here, where the legislature says, you know, this is including but not limited to pickups as defined, in other words, as limited by subdivision 26. Why isn't the as limited by subdivision 26 the same as a list of allergenic nuts?
Because we have subpart B of section 24, Your Honor.
Okay, let's assume that so too. I say, let's include subpart B in my invitation. I say you can bring over, and I encourage you to bring over absolutely any food item you purchase from the food court, but I'm not including any bread. So not including bread. And by the way, subpart C, this includes, but is not limited to, meats, fruit, whatever, and nuts, provided that the nuts are non-allergenic.
I would submit to you, Judge, that if we are applying rules of statutory construction, which we're required to do here to your hypothetical, the fact that the exclusionary provision only lists bread would mean that it would be reasonable to interpret the third part about non-allergenic nuts as allowing someone to bring non-allergenic nuts.
Okay, and statutes aren't written perfectly ever, but I would submit to you that if you showed up with peanuts under that circumstance and you were to argue, you've got this, it's true, it's obvious you didn't want me to bring peanuts, but I'm going to bring them anyway because of the way you worded it, because of the structure, I would say you're elevating the syntax form over the semantic context or the semantic substance. And I don't think, and I'm not, I'm saying, I think you might be able to reach the conclusion that I'm suggesting without agreeing with Ms. Hurley's argument that there's an ambiguity at all. It's unambiguous that I don't want peanuts. if I framed it, the invitation in the way that I framed it, is it not?
I think you have a much better argument in the hypothetical than there would be under this statute for this specific reason. Appellant's argument is the reason why C matters is because there are all these defined terms in 168.002 that you have to consider. And the legislature didn't specifically include or exclude any of those. Well, that's not true, because subdivision B of section 24 does specifically exclude buses. And if we look at 168.002 subdivision 4, buses are defined. It excludes motorcycles. In subdivision 19 of that statute, motorcycles are defined. So we have the legislature having spoken in this case.
I'm not sure that gets around my problem. I mean, one of the things you pointed out in your brief, you know, we're supposed to treat every word, you know, we interpret whether there's an ambiguity within the context of the statute as a whole. And we're not supposed to assume, in fact, we're supposed to assume the opposite. We're not supposed to assume that the legislature intended or included any superfluous terms. So if you agree with that, why don't you explain why the legislature included the term as defined in subdivision 26? What does that mean?
What I believe it means is that the legislature wanted to identify certain types of vehicles that there might possibly be some confusion over. 3/4-ton pickup trucks, electric vehicles. What's the other one? Another type of electric vehicle. They wanted to make clear that those were included.
Well, wait.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a pickup truck as defined by subdivision 26. It could have just said pickup trucks and vans, but it didn't. It included a qualifying, definitional, therefore limiting description of the term. So I guess my question is, why would the legislature include this limiting language if it didn't intend a limitation?
If you're asking me to speculate, Your Honor, I would say the reason for that is that one-ton pickups are defined in a specific way under 168.002, such that one-ton pickups can be considered commercial vehicles, but will not be considered commercial vehicles if the purchaser and the registrant of that vehicle commits to it being used for personal use only. And I would say that is the reason, from a taxation and registration standpoint, that the definition in section 24 does not specifically reference one-ton pickups, because more has to be done for one-ton pickups than for 3/4-ton pickups to take them outside of this realm of commercial vehicle. The buyer has to tell the DMV, I'm using it for personal use only. And at that point, it is not a commercial vehicle. So it illustrates the problem of the No Fault Act borrowing the definition from the taxation and registration statute. But I would submit to you, Your Honor, that because the No Fault Act only allows us to look at section 24 and section 26 by reference, that we can't go beyond that in terms of trying to figure out the why of it. But is the language ambiguous? I would submit it's not. I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, but we can't lose the letter of the law if it's unambiguous.
Right, but, I'm suggesting that in the same way that I gave in my hypothetical, you would just be interpreting the letter. You're not looking beyond it for the meaning, but you're using the letter of the invitation to include an exception, a limitation in what would appear by syntax to be an unlimited category. And I don't know why that wouldn't be, you agree that's certainly possible that legislature could write a statute in exactly the same way. I think, are you saying that's not possible? Or are you saying that it just wasn't written that way in this case?
I'm saying, in my view, it wasn't written that way in this case, Your Honor. I don't see the ambiguity that you're suggesting there.
I'm not suggesting an ambiguity.
You're suggesting unambiguous interpretation that's different than... You're basically suggesting, as I understand it, that the language of subdivision C implicitly is an implicit exclusionary provision.
Yes, or an explicitly limitation on the type of pickup trucks that are included among a list of other non-exclusive list of inclusions.
And again, Your Honor, the only thing I could say in response to that is if we didn't have subdivision B, I would think you have that's a much more compelling interpretation. But the legislature excluded the things they intended to exclude specifically in subdivision B. And I think it is inconsistent with both the language of subdivision B and the flow of the provision from A to C to interpret additional exclusions being added to that provision that aren't included in subdivision B.
Well, can I ask a quick question? First of all, I owe Ms. Hurley an apology. I was asking my question to the wrong party. There are double negatives in this, in the no fault statute. So my extreme apologies for that. So now addressing the correct party in this. So if any motor vehicle means any motor vehicle, what's the logic? Let's assume my 50 ton truck, I don't use it for hire. It doesn't qualify as a common carrier, but it would qualify as a passenger vehicle. So what's the logic in that then?
I would disagree.
That the smaller pickup trucks, you know, would, but the bigger ones wouldn't.
I would disagree that a semi-tractor trailer or any big giant truck would necessarily qualify as a passenger automobile under subdivision 24.
Because
we have to look at designed and used. And that's really illustrated. I mean, if we're going to look at 168.002's other definitions, it's illustrated by subdivision 37, which is the definition of truck.
So is there anything in the record that this Ram, whatever it is, and the F-150 were designed and used for passenger use?
Well, what's in the record is that they were used for normal transportation by the individuals who owned them and not for any kind of business use, common carrier. They were used to transport the driver. But
going to Judge Siegel's question, I mean, so you say designed and used. Isn't a semi-tractor designed and used to carry an individual? I mean, it does other things. But it does carry an individual, and that's all that's required for passenger automobile, isn't it?
Except that 168.002 subdivision 37 says a truck means any motor vehicle designed and used for carrying things other than passengers, except pickup trucks and vans, which aren't trucks. Included within the definition of passenger automobile in subdivision 2024. So if it's a semi, a semi is not designed and used for transporting people. It's designed and used for carrying things other than passengers. By design, it cannot be a passenger automobile under subdivision 24. A pickup truck that's larger than 3/4 ton can be a passenger automobile because it is not designed and used for the purpose of carrying things other than passengers. It could be mixed use, but it's certainly not designed only for the purpose of hauling trailers, for example. Same thing with a dump truck, not designed for doing anything other than hauling material. Box truck, not designed for doing anything other than carrying, like a moving truck, carrying people's personal items. So I don't think we have the definitional problem that appellant's counsel suggests, because semis don't even get up to bat if you're considering all of 168.002, it's not a passenger automobile. It's a truck, separately defined with a specific use purpose. And I see my time is up, so unless there are any follow-ups, I should probably be quiet now.
Your time is up, but thank you for your argument. Ms. Hurley, any rebuttal?
Yes, I guess I'll pick up where council left off and talk a little bit about the fact that if you look at the history of this particular statute, you see these three different provisions in it throughout time. One of those, which I think is really on point with what council brought up, is this notion of use.
I mean, we don't get to the history unless we see an ambiguity, right?
Right, Your Honor. And I mean, it's certainly our position that there's a known ambiguity here. And part of that it surrounds around what is the purpose of subpart C if not to bring in these other definitional items? I mean, you're rendering it completely superfluous if you don't.
What is the ambiguity though? Before we even talk about whether all the things you're asking us to talk about, we have to identify some language in the statute that is in the language susceptible to more than one meaning. What is the language in subdivision 24 that you believe is susceptible to alternative meanings?
I think it's the word any, Your Honor. I think that's where we're coming up with different points of view on what that word means.
You then have to suggest, I suppose, that the word any on its face is ambiguous. And I would suggest that if you're just looking at the language, the word any is certainly not ambiguous.
Right, Your Honor. I think when you look at the statute, and I do think that you have to do this regardless of what the No Fault Act has in its statute. If you're trying to interpret subdivision 24, the statutory construction requires you to look at all of the subdivisions of 168.002. When you read that definition in the context of the other definitions, we believe that the word any is clearly meaning anything that's not otherwise defined that meets the under 15 passengers, including the driver. That's what that word, that phrase, I guess, is looking at, is that's the any that it's referring to. It's not referring to any vehicle under the universe. And I do think it's important to consider the implications of what is being said, because, well, yes, a semi-tractor trailer.
It doesn't say any vehicle under the universe. It says any motor vehicle designed and used for carrying individuals, including the driver, not more than 15.
Right.
So in order to get to your ambiguity position and look beyond the statute, I'm looking for the language that's ambiguous. And I don't know that you've identified it in your brief or in oral argument. I'll give you another run at it.
Well, Your Honor, I guess that provision we think would be ambiguous because of the way that we're interpreting it. And part of the reason that we're interpreting it that way is because of subpart C. Because subpart C is specifically pulling in these other vehicles that are separately defined and identifying them, we do think that's creating an ambiguity. If you didn't have that provision, then I think it would be much easier to say this means any motor vehicle. It absolutely means any motor vehicle. When you bring in those separately defined items, I think you're making it clear that any is referring to anything that's not otherwise been defined. I think that is the reference point for that makes that ambiguous when you start doing that. It was such as your example, Your Honor, where you were saying includes but is not limited to any, non-allergenic food. Well, what did you mean when you included that? Were you meaning to indicate and direct?
My hypothetical was based on the possibility that you can have an unambiguous exception included in what would otherwise appear to be a unlimited list of things, that you're not there. There's nothing ambiguous in the hypothetical that I gave. But in order to get to that point, and you keep arguing for an ambiguity rather than looking at it on its plain face. And I think that's where I'm having a struggle with your position.
Right, Your Honor. And I guess that we see the ambiguity, like I said, when you read it in the context as a subdivision of that entire statute, when you start including all of these other vehicles, that if that word any meant everything, then you start including all of these other vehicles, that has very real implications, certainly. I do think that it makes it more ambiguous. I do think it's open to interpretation, which is the way, frankly, that it, as far as I can tell, it's always been treated that way when you look at everything else, the history of this statute. But when the court decides today how to define passenger vehicle, the implications will not just be for the No Fault Act. They will be for that vehicle and registration statute. That's just simply how it will, that's how it will work. And so if the court says it's unambiguous, all pickup trucks are considered passenger vehicles, then that is what it is. I mean, that is what it is, regardless of their size, regardless of anything else, that's what that will mean. And that was what the implications will be. It won't just be for the No Fault Act. It will be for that vehicle registration and taxes statute.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. This is very interesting, both English and substantive issue. Thank you for your briefing. I'm glad you had a district court that was apparently as interested in these things, both substantively and linguistically, as we are. It gives us a good starting point. But we appreciate your oral argument as well as your briefing. And the matter is submitted. We'll take it under advisement and issue our opinion within the statutory period.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.